Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, January 27, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A senior ZANU-PF Politburo member says President Robert Mugabe is the most suitable person to lead both the African Union and SADC as pressure mounts on the AU to give him a pass as chairman of the continental body.
Now that he's assuming the African Union chairpersonship and is also the chairperson of SADC, it says a lot of a man who really does not mind about solving his problems, that is, at home.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa says government's takeover of the $1.35 billion Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe debt will push the country's external debt to almost $7 billion.
Speaker says the bill proposes to liquidate the assumed debt through issuance of treasury bills or any other debt is paid.
And China and the African Union today signed a memorandum of understanding that the Chinese are dubbing the project of the century.
A senior ZANU-PF Politburo member says President Robert Mugabe is the most suitable person to lead both the African Union and SADC at this point in time as pressure mounts on the AU to give him a pass as chairman of the continental body at the summit that is currently underway in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Mr. Mugabe is tipped to chair the African Union even as tensions are rising in his ruling ZANU-PF party, and the country is being described by some think tanks as fast becoming a failing state. Some African non-governmental organizations expressed concern at Mr. Mugabe assuming the role, citing his alleged tainted human rights record. Tension is again escalating in ZANU-PF as political commissar Xavier Kasukuwere tries to restructure the party after the ouster of former Vice President Joyce Mujuru and her perceived allies.
Party insiders say provinces such as Mashonaland Central, Mashonaland East, Mashingo, Manicaland and Bulawayo have been torn by infighting. Some economists say as the ruling party focuses on internal disputes, the country's economic challenges are not being addressed. Mr. Mugabe, as chairman of the African Union and SADC, is expected to host top-level ministerial meetings and extraordinary summits that some analysts say might end up straining Harare's resources. Independent political analyst Blessing Vava tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that Mr. Mugabe will focus on his foreign policy, neglecting Zimbabweans.
It's a lot on President Mugabe's table, but as you know that President Mugabe is not very much worried about what is happening in Zimbabwe, you know, for a fact that he's just coming from a holiday that he went while the people of Zimbabwe are facing a lot of economic challenges. And also, his party, ZANU-PF, is facing a lot of challenges. So that on its own shows you that this is not a man who's really serious in tackling the issues that are affecting his country. And now that he's assuming the African Union chairpersonship and is also the chairperson of SADC, it says a lot of a man who really does not mind about solving his problems, that is, at home, but is very much worried about globe-trotting, flying away from this country.
Turning to the problems in his ruling ZANU-PF party, the party promised that after its Congress, all will be well. Why is it that political temperatures are still rising?
ZANU-PF is a party that is too many factions. In fact, we're just being told of the Mujuru and the Mnangagwa factions. But what is now at play, it clearly shows that there are many factions in ZANU-PF. The issue of succession is a very serious issue in ZANU-PF. All the factions that are there now, they know for a fact that President Mugabe is now too old, and President Mugabe probably is now every day becoming incapacitated to lead the state.
That was independent political analyst Blessing Vava speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Reacting, former cabinet minister and ZANU-PF Politburo member Munyaradzi Paul Mangwana tells Blessing Zulu that Mr. Mugabe is the most capable person to lead Africa.
I think President Mugabe is the most suitable person to lead both SADC and Africa at this point in time. He has got a wealth of experience in dealing with challenges. He has been in power for over 30 years. He led the war of liberation. He understands the challenges any African country can face, both politically and economically, and is best suited to give guidance. Apparently, when he's chairman of SADC, he's not a full-time employee of SADC. When he's chairman of the AU, he's not a full-time employee of the AU. There are structures which have been put in place. What he needs to give is simply guidance on how to resolve any challenges which may face SADC as a region and the AU as a continent. I do not think you have a problem at all. The experienced people running structures in SADC, in the AU, AU is being led by a very competent diplomat in the form of Madam Gosazana Zuma, and she's able to steer Africa while she's getting political guidance in terms of decision-making from the most experienced politician on this earth, President Mugabe.
But Mr. Mangwana, Mr. Mugabe's critics are saying Zimbabwe is, quote, a failing state, and there is nothing that Africa can learn from Zimbabwe, looking at its economy and its record when it comes to human rights issues.
Zimbabwe is not a failing state at all. We have been under sanctions for a record period of 15 years. The only other country which has gone through a longer period of sanctions than Zimbabwe is Cuba. And we have learned to be self-sufficient, looking for solutions within. We have a running economy. It may not be running at the pace which we want. We have our people going to school, they've got food on the table, health institutions are running, the whole state is running. We are busy retooling our own infrastructure. We are now working on ensuring that our industry ticks again.
Former Cabinet Minister and ZANU-PF Politburo member Munyaradzi Paul Mangwana speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Meanwhile, ZANU-PF National Political Commissar Sevia Kasukwere has backtracked on his decision to block the expulsion of the party's former Secretary for Administration Didmus Mutasa after the ruling party's Manicaland Provincial Executive Committee had proposed the former party stalwart be expelled from the former Liberation Party. Kasukwere told a news conference at the ZANU-PF headquarters that the party's Politburo will take the necessary measures against Mutasa.
Manicaland province have made a recommendation on Comrade Didmus Mutasa and several to do with his conduct, what he has been saying, what he has been doing, and the party is not excited at all. And so we have made it clear even before that I don't see how Politburo will send him the way of that kind of recommendation coming from Manicaland. Why would we turn around and say withdraw it?
On Monday, Kasukwere told Studio 7 after his party's provincial coordinating meeting in Mutare that what the party has done in sidelining Mutasa and his colleagues was enough, adding that all suspended members would remain in the party. He added that there were no plans of taking further action against the suspended individuals. Kasukwere also announced that Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa's wife, Auxilia, will contest in the March parliamentary by-elections on a ZANU-PF ticket for the Chirumanzu Sibagwe constituency following the elevation of her husband to the post of Vice President. He added that Banuel Senyemwe will represent the party in Mount Darwin West after the seat fell vacant following the appointment of now ousted Vice President Joyce Mujuru.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa says government's takeover of the $1.35 billion Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe debt will push the country's external debt to almost $7 billion. He says the country's domestic debt is expected to soar to more than $1 billion. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera has more details from Harare.
Chinamasa told lawmakers during the second reading of the Reserve Bank Debt Assumption Bill that the central bank's external debt, which currently stands at $596 million, will push the country's external debt to almost $7 billion if Parliament passes the bill authorizing government to take over the RBZ debt.
Government will assume the Reserve Bank's external debt, estimated at $596.02 million, to add to its stock of existing external debt of $6.2 billion to be dealt with as part of deliberations with multilateral institutions and creditors who are members of the Paris Club and other bilateral creditors.
He said the central bank debt would be subject to validation and reconciliation to establish the extent of the bank's liability. Chinamasa said the Treasury is already validating the debt through its debt management office. He said the debt would be liquidated through various ways, such as issuance of Treasury bills.
Mr. Speaker said the bill proposes to liquidate the assumed debt through issuance of Treasury bills or any other debt is paid. No stamp duty or other duty or tax and no fees or other charges shall be payable in respect of anything done under this act.
The central bank debt accrued through quasi-fiscal activities, which included, among other things, the procurement of farming equipment that was distributed freely to mostly ZANU-PF supporters and purchasing of vehicles for lawmakers and some government departments. The debt assumption bill, if passed into law, would authorize government to take over RBZ debt accrued prior to December the 31st, 2008. Economist Nyasha Mchichwa says government is already in a debt trap and does not need to assume the RBZ debt, given that those who got equipment from the bank had not repaid their loans. He said he is surprised government is taking over the RBZ debt when it cannot manage to pay interest on its huge debt. Meanwhile, a French business delegation led by Gerard Wolf, the vice chairman of the Africa Committee of the MEDEF International, is in Zimbabwe for 3 days to assess investment opportunities in the country. Wolf told journalists in Harare that French companies are well aware of Zimbabwe's economic potential and investment opportunities. He noted that Zimbabwe offers a good environment for international investors. 10 companies are part of the business delegation with interest in sectors such as infrastructure, transport, and logistics. British and Danish investment groups visited the country last year, but it still remains to be seen whether they will invest in the Southern African nation with the feared indigenization law, which compels foreign-owned firms to transfer majority equity stakes to local people. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
While people in Manicaland may be celebrating after two schools in the province bested the top 100 schools in terms of A-level performance last year, those in other provinces that did not fare so well are wondering what can be done to improve their ranking. A rankings list released by ZIMSEC yesterday shows St. Faith Secondary School at number 1, followed by Nyanga High. St. Anthony High from Mashingo is at number 3. Matabeleland province failed to make it into the top 10. Studio 7's reporter, Ntungamili Nkomo, reached Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe Secretary General Raymond Majongwe, who says government should focus more on the poor performing schools to improve performance.
If you're going to find that one province does good, it's because the churches had an interest. They built so many schools. So ordinarily, where we have the biggest number of schools, performance in that particular area will obviously also be the best, and the results will appear very positive in those areas. But if you're also going to analyze the facts in terms of how pupils are accepted into these schools, there are schools that will tell you clearly that without 5, 6, 7, 8, you are not welcome. And those schools are bound to perform better. When this analysis is being made, it must also include those places, because if you're going to tell me that this school had 100% when it took every child into their classes with 7 A's and all of them get a pass rate, let's go to those schools where the teachers toiled and made let those people who had C's at O level get A's and B's at A level. Then we reward those. Because as long as they are going to be talking of these schools where they are performing and living up to the expectations of the parents of these children who came in because they were the cream, de la cream, then the analysis falls short. But as far as we are concerned, we say to those that did well, well done, but we want to interrogate this system more scientifically and properly.
For those that did not fare very well, what do you think should be done?
The situation is very clear. We have schools that have no capacity, schools that have no books. Teachers are not well paid. They remove the incentives. There's a lot of bickering and a lot of anger and trepidation within the teacher movement. Teachers are not happy. So as long as these issues, the issues around remuneration, payment, housing, and pensions and everything are not addressed, we are not going to get the best of results.
That was PTUZ Secretary General Raymond Majongwe speaking with Studio 7's Ntungameli Nkomo from Harare. In a related development, representatives of government workers failed to meet as arranged today, as some of them did not turn up for a meeting called to press the Zimbabwe government to address outstanding issues, change in pay debts, and a proposed strike. Apex Council member Sifiso Ndlovu of the Zimbabwe Teachers Union told Studio 7 the meeting was meant to get a feedback from members after unions met a fortnight ago and agreed to consult their members first before they make a decision.
The meeting failed to take off because some unions did not come to the meeting and therefore we could not proceed with the meeting in the absence of that. As it was a meeting that was seeking to find the consensus on the way forward, particularly on the resolution that was being mutated at Apex that people want to go in this election. But then because of that absence of some unions, it became impossible to find any platform meaningful enough to declare any conclusion to that resolution.
What were the reasons given by these unions?
As of me, I have not been appraised, but what I know for certain is that there are not enough numbers to support any meeting and come up with a possible decision.
We understand that unions were divided over this industrial action issue. Can we say this is one of the reasons why some unions failed to turn up?
I suspect that could be one of the reasons, but then without anybody telling us why they're not in, that's the cause. But for those that were there, some had already declared and clearly indicated their positions, indicating that the issue of the strike was not an appropriate weapon to be used. The timing would not really yield any results.
That was Zimbabwe Teachers Association Chief Executive Officer Sifiso Ndlovu in Harare. Some civil servants are reported to have chickened out of the meeting after calls for a strike were linked to some ousted ZANU-PF officials, including former Vice President Joyce Mujuru. We also reached the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe Secretary Raymond Majongwe, who says he was disappointed that some unions decided to boycott the meeting, yet they claim to represent workers.
Apparently, what happened was when we got to the PSA house where we normally do our meetings, we were told that the meeting room, the boardroom, was already booked, and therefore we couldn't meet in it. So we were then told that we were going to meet at Zinta. But the real question is, this is a meeting that was penciled for the 27th 2 weeks ago, and to our surprise, we then couldn't meet. Another tragedy was the leadership of the Apex Council, save for the chairperson, Richard Gordon. All of them were not present. So finally, when we then convened at Zinta, we were able to share the references, and it became clearer that our suspicions were that there was a meeting that was held, and people agreed and connived that they were not going to attend this meeting for the 27th, and that then made the proceeding and the getting to make any resolution or decision impossible.
That was PTUZ Secretary Raymond Majongwe in Harare with Studio 7.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kilohertz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Now,
Now let's take a look at regional and international news.
Islamic State militants have threatened to kill a Japanese and Jordanian hostage within 24 hours, according to an online message attributed to the group.
About 3,000 child soldiers will be released from an armed group in South Sudan, according to the United Nations Children's Agency Fund, UNICEF.
U.S. President Barack Obama is in Riyadh leading a 30-member delegation to pay respects following the death of Saudi Arabia's King Abdullah.
A massive winter storm dropped 30 centimeters of snow on the northeastern U.S. by Tuesday morning, but fell short of forecasters' worst predictions.
Indonesia's military has halted search and recovery efforts for an Air Asia flight that crashed into the Java Sea last month, killing all 162 people on board.
And the Pentagon says Kurdish fighters now control about 90% of the Syrian city of Kobani, denying the Islamic State militants one of their strategic goals.
China and the African Union today signed a memorandum of understanding that the Chinese are dubbing the project of the century. Signed under the framework of the continent's Agenda 2063 that seeks to drive development in Africa, the MOU on continental transport will change the face of Africa if it is fully implemented. VOA Studio 7 Sandra Nyaira has the details from Addis Ababa in Ethiopia.
The African Union Commission Chairperson Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma and Mr. Zhang Ming, the Special Envoy of the Chinese Government and Vice Foreign Minister of China, signed the memorandum that will see China help Africa develop high-speed rail, linking all 54 countries through high-speed railway, aviation, road highways and industrialization infrastructure. Dlamini Zuma said although there are some historical ties between Africa and China, this mammoth project is the first of its kind between China and Africa at continental level. She said it will help Africans develop and deal with issues of joblessness, poverty and related issues.
Amongst the things we've agreed on is also to train so that we have the skills both to deal with all the areas. So this is really the most substantive project the AU has ever had with any partner.
Mr. Zhang dubbed the Memorandum of Understanding the document of the century, adding, though ambitious and broad, the project was feasible. He said it would change the face of Africa, especially as economies in most African countries continue to improve. He said China has enough expertise and knowledge on high-speed rail, road transportation, and related issues that will help change the lives of ordinary people. In aviation, for example, Mr. Zhang said travel hubs will be created, cutting the existing code that sees Africans traveling within the continent having to go to the west first to catch connecting flights back to Africa.
这个李总理和马总理之间, I still remember during a meeting between my premier and Madam Zuma, Madam Zuma mentioned that the African people have a dream of having the day when all the 54 African capitals will be linked by high-speed rail.
The two refused to quantify the cost of the project, but Dlamini Zuma said teams on the ground were still to come up with a figure, working out financing modalities and related issues. She said a nuclear of teams has already been put in place to work on high-speed rail, aviation and industrialization, with teams already working in the countries in which the project will begin. Meanwhile, the AU chairperson, in outlining the AU summit agenda to journalists, said one of the most important issues outside terrorism, conflict in a number of countries, and peace and security that heads of state will discuss this week is the funding of the Pan-African body.
There is flexibility in terms of what countries, what mechanisms countries can use to get those resources. Some countries may decide that they'll just pay directly from their fiscals. There's no problem with that. The reason we even went into looking at alternate sources of funding is that some countries were saying it would not be possible for them to increase the contribution if it's based only on their fiscus.
She said alternative sources of funding need to be secured for the AU, with member states contributing more. The AU needs more predictable funding from member states in addition to what is coming in from donor organizations. President Robert Mugabe is expected to attend the summit with other African leaders. He is also expected to assume the chairmanship of the AU. Reporting for Studio 7 from Addis Ababa in Ethiopia, I'm Sandra Nyaira.
Around 300 survivors of the Auschwitz death camp were gathering on Tuesday to mark 70 years since its liberation by Soviet troops, joined by world leaders for a commemoration held in the shadow of war in Ukraine and a rise in anti-Semitism in Europe. Tuesday's gathering in southern Poland marks perhaps the last major anniversary that survivors of the Nazi German camp will be able to attend in numbers, given the youngest are now in their 70s. Some 1,500 attended the 60th anniversary. Around 1.5 million people, mainly European Jews, were gassed, shot, hanged, and burnt at the camp in southern Poland during World War II before the Red Army entered its gates in winter 1945. It has become probably the most poignant symbol of a Holocaust that claimed 6 million Jewish lives across Europe. For perspective, reporter Tatenda Kumbo speaks with Edmo Perez Hamandishe Maramwidze of the Lemba people of Zimbabwe and South Africa, who have traced their roots back to Israel. Maramwidze, who is a Messianic Jewish pastor and former Gutu North Member of Parliament, says today is a day to reflect on the Holocaust.
Our ancestors came from Israel 2,600 years ago. They came from a place called Lemba, in which you can find an old, old map of Israel. We came from there.
Today, it is the Holocaust Memorial, where the world is marking 70 years since the liberation of Auschwitz by Soviet troops. What does this mean to yourself, but also Zimbabweans and everyone worldwide when we look at this day?
Now, you see, we are also attached to what happened to the Jews in Europe, in Russia, in Poland, and all those places. We are attached to that. It's just that, wherever a Jew is, he suffers persecution. He suffers a lot of, they face a lot of persecution because they are foreigners in their land. Like us, the Lemba, we're called Vanam Son, meaning that we are visitors in this land.
That was Edmo Perez Hamandishe Maramwidze of the Lemba people of Zimbabwe and South Africa, who trace their roots back to Israel, speaking with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will be talking with listeners and experts about the looting of shops owned by foreigners in South Africa as some Zimbabweans flee Soweto.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
And now to recap today's top stories.
A senior ZANU-PF Politburo member says President Robert Mugabe is the most suitable person to lead both the African Union and SADC.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa says government's takeover of the $1.35 billion Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe debt will push the country's external debt to almost $7 billion.
And China and the African Union today signed a memorandum of understanding that the Chinese are dubbing the project of the century.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Chris Gande in Washington. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.